Hello and welcome to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Manillen. I'm your host. On today's program, the Senate Commerce Committee hears about net neutrality again. Only this time, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin is there to talk about how bad Comcast has been. All of that and more. You do want to stay tuned. On April 22nd, FCC Chairman Kevin Martin appeared in front of the Senate Commerce Committee to talk about network management practices, or more specifically, network neutrality. This comes right on the heels of the FCC's own hearing, public hearing, they held at Stanford University the previous week. And at least one familiar face from that particular hearing, Professor Larry Lessig, was also at the Senate Commerce Committee to talk about the need for internet freedom. And we'll hear a little bit more from Professor Lessig in a little bit. But first, let's listen to what Chairman Martin had to say to the Senate Commerce Committee about Comcast and about what it plans to do or may need to do in order to guarantee internet freedom.
The commission is obligated to preserve and promote the vibrant and open character of the internet. In 2005, the commission adopted an internet policy statement containing four key principles. The goal was to clarify how we would evaluate broadband internet practices on a going forward basis. Specifically, the statement says that to encourage broadband deployment and preserve and promote the open and interconnected nature of the public internet, consumers are entitled to access the lawful internet content of their choice. Consumers are entitled to run applications and use services of their choice, subject to the needs of law enforcement. Consumers are entitled to connect their choice of legal devices that do not harm the network. And consumers are entitled to competition among network providers, application service providers, and content providers. Now, the Commission explicitly noted that these principles allowed for reasonable network management. As the expert communications agency, it was appropriate for the Commission to adopt, and it is the Commission's role to enforce, this internet policy statement. The Supreme Court in its Brand X decision specifically recognized the Commission's authority to adopt regulations to protect broadband internet access. I do not believe any additional regulations are needed at this time because we have a complaint and adjudication process. But I do believe that the Commission has a responsibility to enforce the principles that it has already adopted. Indeed, on several occasions, the entire Commission has reiterated that it has the authority and will enforce these current principles. For example, in 2006, when I appeared before this committee, then-Chairman Stevens asked me whether the Commission had the existing authority to take action if a problem developed. And I responded that the Commission had authority under Title I to enforce consumers' unfettered access to the Internet. When 1 year ago, the Commission specifically committed to enforcing our existing principles. Specifically, the Commission stated that, quote, the Commission under Title I of the Communications Act has the ability to adopt and enforce the net neutrality principles it announced in the Internet Policy Statement. In fact, we have already taken enforcement action in response to other complaints. In the Madison River complaint, the Commission ordered a telephone company to stop blocking voice over IP calls. The Commission should address issues of appropriate network management using a consistent framework. There are several factors that I believe the Commission should consider. First, the Commission should consider whether the network management practices are intended to distinguish between legal and illegal activity. The Commission's network principles only recognize and protect the user's access to legal content. The sharing of illegal content, such as child pornography or pirated material, is not protected. Similarly, applications that are intended to harm the network are not protected. Now, second, the Commission should consider whether the network service provider has adequately disclosed its network management practices. A hallmark of whether something is reasonable is whether an operator is willing to precisely and fully disclose what it is they are doing. Application designers need to understand what will and will not work on a particular network, and consumers must be fully informed about the exact nature of the service they are purchasing and any potential limitations on that service. For example, has the consumer been informed that certain applications used to watch video will not work properly when there is high congestion? Additionally, consumers need to be assured that the broadband network operators are able to deliver the speeds of service that they are purchasing. And if internet access is sold as an unlimited service, Do consumers understand that if they use too much of it, they can still be cut off? And finally, I believe the Commission should consider whether the network management technique arbitrarily blocks or degrades a particular application. Is the network management practice selectively identifying particular applications or content for differential treatment? If so, I believe we should evaluate these practices with heightened scrutiny. The network operator should bear the burden of demonstrating that the practice furthers an important interest and is narrowly tailored to serve that interest. Such an approach would not mean that any action taken against a particular application would automatically be a violation. Rather, it would trigger a more searching review of both the particular concern and whether the network management solution was tailored to resolve that concern in as narrow a manner as possible. Such practices should not be overly broad in their application so that they become over or under inclusive. For example, if the concern is about stopping illegal content, a network provider should not block a particular application to all users if that application transmits both legal and illegal content. Rather, it should filter all of the illegal content and permit the flow of material that is legal. An analysis considering the factors I've identified would recognize the importance of legitimate network management techniques while providing a framework to analyze whether carriers' actions are reasonable on a case-by-case basis. Now, consumers have recently alleged that certain operators, and specifically Comcast, are blocking and or degrading consumers' access to the Internet by targeting specific peer-to-peer applications. The Commission is still investigating these complaints, and we have not yet determined whether the actions violated our principles protecting consumer access to the Internet. At our hearings in Boston and at Stanford, we heard from several engineers and technical experts. According to the testimony at those hearings, Comcast appears to have utilized Internet equipment that blocks certain attempts by subscribers to upload information using particular legal peer-to-peer applications by pretending to be the subscriber's computer and falsifying a reset packet to end that communication. It also degrades the corresponding attempts to download information using the same peer-to-peer applications. Specifically, based on the testimony we have received thus far, some users were not able to upload any content that they wanted. It does not appear that this technique was used only to occasionally delay traffic at particular nodes suffering from network congestion at that time. Indeed, based on the testimony we have received thus far, this equipment was typically deployed over a wider geographic area or system, and it is not even capable of knowing when an individual cable segment of the network is congested. This equipment blocks uploads of a significant portion of subscribers in that part of the network, regardless of the actual levels of congestion at that particular time. Now, as the Commission continues its examination of the complaints before it, it's critically important to make sure that we are fully informed. And we need to fully understand what impact the operator's actions are having on consumers' broadband experience so that we may better evaluate the reasonableness of any network management practice. Thank you again for the opportunity to be here, and I look forward to answering any questions that you might have.
Chairman Martin, you've just testified that you believe the FCC has sufficient enforcement authority to resolve network neutrality issues. Now, if you proceed to use this authority, I suppose you would expect subsequent litigation challenging your ability to act in this area. If your answer is yes, do you believe that additional authority from the Congress is necessary? Or is there sufficient authority at the present time?
I think that the Commission has sufficient authority. I did ask several witnesses at the hearing in Cambridge at Harvard about whether they thought we had the authority. Some of the carriers testified that they did. Verizon responded that they thought we did have the authority. Comcast said they wanted to get back to us, and they've subsequently filed a letter saying they do not believe we have the authority. I believe we do have the sufficient authority to do that, but I believe you are right that there may be subsequent litigation by some of the carriers as a result. At least that's what they seem to indicate in their most recent response to me.
So at this point, a very large provider with a lot of legal resources says you don't have authority. Let me ask you, do you believe that you need this authority? You believe you have it. I assume you believe you have it and you believe you need it, correct?
That's correct. I think
so.
I think it's important that we have that.
So what if a court says they agree with Comcast and you don't have it? You will come to us and ask that we restore that capability?
If obviously, I think it is important that we have the ability to ensure that consumers have unfettered access to the Internet, and if a court said that we did not have that authority, I think someone needs to be ensuring
that. So would giving you that authority be regulating, as some of my colleagues have suggested, re-regulating, intensive regulation?
I don't believe that just merely providing us the authority without requirements that we do anything with it, particularly adopting rules, would be re-regulating. No, sir.
And that was an interchange between Senator Byron Dorgan of North Dakota and Kevin Martin, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, during his appearance at a hearing on network neutrality April 22nd in the Senate Commerce Committee. And one of the interesting things I find about what Kevin Martin is doing here with regard to network neutrality and his position on whether or not the FCC needs legislation is that he's rather honest in assessing the fact that the FCC is very likely to be sued by Comcast if it takes any sort of punitive action towards the company for its network blocking techniques. And he also acknowledges rather readily Comcast's position that the FCC's position paper of sorts, policy paper on the on network neutrality isn't necessarily enforceable. And really, it's kind of a strange razor's edge he's walking because of the fact that, indeed, the FCC has not created a specific regulation or policy about network neutrality. It really is just a position paper. It really does amount to being just guidelines. And in fact, that very word is used on the principles themselves, that they are guidelines. And this is all happening because the FCC just a few years ago made the Internet no longer considered to be part of what was known as common carrier provisions. Common carrier applies to the phone system. Indeed, many people get their Internet over the phones, whether it's a DSL line, which is a phone line, or over traditional modems. And part of common carrier really places true network neutrality regulations to phones, saying that anyone can connect any device they want to, provided they work within the rules of the system and do not degrade the service, they can do anything they want with the phones. And this is really important legislation. This is a very important principle, really, because it's what allowed people to use fax machines and for the telephone modem to be created, which allowed the Internet to become not just something used in research universities and in the military, but to become a true public mass medium. That would not have been possible without common carrier principles. And the FCC took the Internet out of common carriage, which then opened a door for the network management practices, the BitTorrent blocking, which we're seeing happening with Comcast. So the answer that Kevin Martin's FCC had was to instead draft these principles of Internet freedom, but are not regulation, they're not laws. So he's walking this line of saying that what Comcast has been doing is not permissible, it should not be permissible, and may indeed be subject to action by the FCC, and yet he seems not to want to have either the true strict regulatory power or the congressionally mandated legal power to attack it. He seems to believe the FCC has the ability, nevertheless, to deal with this issue, even if the regulations have not been written. It's an interesting position. And I'm not sure exactly why he's taking it, whether it's a matter of principle in that he really wants to have a strong FCC, although as a very adamant free marketeer and someone who's been a big friend of industry, I have difficulty seeing that, or he's seeing his own mortality as the chairman of the FCC, possibly to be replaced with a new president beginning in 2009, and is treading lightly so as not to ruin his chances in industry afterwards. I'm not sure which it is, but it shall be very interesting to see how this goes through with the attention being paid to network neutrality, especially these public hearings where public outcry has been rather substantial and the industry has had a hard time defending itself. With Comcast not even showing up to the most recent Stanford hearing to defend itself and defend its practices, blocking traffic. Perhaps this is the year that we may see an actual law come into existence with a Democratic Congress. There may be just enough push to get some Republicans on board. It is an election year, which could work in the favor of network neutrality because it could be something used to shame, especially vulnerable Republicans up for re-election, or it may throw cold water on the whole business, leaving a lot of senators or congresspeople unwilling to bite the hand that feeds, that hand being that of the telecom industry. And you are listening to Media Geek. This is your weekly look at the world of grassroots and independent media, as well as a critical examination of our media environment. My name is Paul Rees-Manila, and I am your host. And of course, you can check out Media Geek online at MediaGeek.net. That's home to the Media Geek blog. Of course, the radio show is at Radio.MediaGeek.net. You can subscribe to the podcast. You can listen to your browser. You can download the MP3 or Ogg Vorbis file. However you want to listen, it's there at Radio.MediaGeek.net. Well, at the Stanford hearing, everything got kicked off with Professor Larry Lessig of Stanford, a great friend to internet freedom, a great friend to people who believe in the freedom of expression, and who's been a great activist with regard to intellectual property and really trying to let much more culture be free, a great catalyst in the Creative Commons movement. And he gave a great sort of keynote, a great opening lecture, explaining the principles of network neutrality and putting them really in a historical perspective. I wasn't able to get this onto the show last week, and so I thought it would be great to be able to air a little bit of it this week. I don't quite have time for the entirety of his 25-minute presentation, but we do have time for some. So here is Professor Larry Lessig, April 17th, at the Federal Communications Commission hearing on broadband network management at Stanford University.
So my job, first of all, is to welcome you by reminding you of the important place that Stanford has in the history of the technology that we're discussing today, the technology of the internet. It was 40 years ago, in 1968, that BBN got the contract to lay the technology that began to be the core of the internet that was deployed in 1969 here. It was 35 years ago that Vint Cerf started working on the protocols that would eventually become TCP/IP. It was 14 years ago that a couple of grad students began a company called Yahoo in a dorm room here at Stanford. And just about 10 years ago that this site just went up and noticed the very cool copyright sign at the bottom. And it was in 2002 that Tim Wu was here thinking about these principles and putting them together in a forum that has become a compelling framing idea for this debate of network neutrality. But I want to bring you back to a debate that happened just about 8 years ago at the Stanford Law School, a conference called The Policy Implications of End-to-End. Extraordinarily boring title. It was my idea, this title. And it brought together some of the key framers of the early architecture of the internet. And that hearing and discussion framed many of the issues that have continued to be at the center of this debate about network neutrality. And midway through that hearing, a former economist at the FCC, a professor from the University of Pennsylvania, Jerry Fallhaber, offered this intervention. He said, Adam Smith who we all think of as the greatest advocate of the free market, was the first to point out that producers never meet, but that they conspire against the public, always trying to figure out how to monopolize, cartelize, and otherwise get more profits out of the public. Only because there were a whole lot of them competing was that they weren't able to get away with that cartelization. Nonetheless, they continue to try. Producers will always search for ways to escape competition through marketing, customer lock-in, predatory pricing, network effects, etc. Now, what Jerry added to this obvious point from Adam Smith was what I think is the critical point to recognize here. As he said, technology is simply one more set of strategic variables in the producer's quiver. The question they ask, he said, is can we structure our technologies in ways which essentially permit us to build barriers to entry? Can we change the code to defeat competition? And then he asked, so where does the end-to-end argument figure into this? Well, if I translate this into planet economics, that might have to be capitalized, I don't know. End-to-end, Jerry said, in engineering is the equivalent of perfect competitive markets that economists know and love. It's the thing that makes it all transparent, it's open, anybody can do anything. Now, it's this last phrase that I want you to focus on here. It's the thing, end-to-end, or what we now call network neutrality, that makes it all transparent, open, such that anybody can do anything. Now, the point I want to make, actually, 4 points I want to make here are this, following from Jerry's insight here. Number one, it was a technology that gave us something here, an architecture that gave us something here, what Jerry called this thing. That thing gave us transparency, openness, and freedom in the sense of anybody can do anything, what we otherwise call competition. Point two. In a concentrated market, owners have the power to change that thing, the power to change the architecture, using it now as a tool not to facilitate competition but to weaken competition. One more arrow in their quiver, designed to protect themselves, as Adam Smith said, against competition. Number three, now of course, the technology that we celebrate, the internet, has given us important social and political and educational value. This is incredibly important. But we need to remember, this is Stanford, not Berkeley. Those kind of lefty ideas are cool and great, but the really important thing to focus on in the great power of what the internet gave us is to recognize that the transparent, open, and anybody can do anything technology of the internet gave us enormous economic value too, money. It drove the economic growth of the 1990s, the biggest proportion coming from the growth that grew from this technology, which leads to the final point. Before we allow it to change, the burden should be on those who would change its architecture. We should be essentially conservative here, where conservative is a small c. See, very small c right there. Conservative in the sense of being skeptical of hand-waving theories about how changing the basic architecture will bring us such enormous value, and instead face a series of facts about what did give us enormous value. For example, here's another neutral, open network, the electricity grid. It's transparent, open, anybody can do anything on it. As long as you know the protocols, you can plug any technology into it. Now, we could imagine a world where when you plugged something in, the network would ask you, well, is it a Panasonic or a Sony TV you're plugging in? Is it radio or television? Is it pay TV or free TV? And then, depending upon the answer to these questions, allocate the resource according to that information. It's possible to imagine an electricity grid like that. Would it be better? Can we imagine that it would be better? Well, I think economists would tell us it's possible it would be better. But my point is, we would need a very strong demonstration from people other than the kind of coin-operated experts that tend to populate Washington these days that this is, in fact, right, that we would advance economic growth with this change. And I think we should be skeptical. We should have a kind of Missouri attitude here. Show me, right? Show me that innovation won't be harmed from this change. Show me investment won't be choked. Show me competition will continue. And until you show me that, don't allow this to change. Now, when many people have tried to demand of network owners that they show the benefit from the change, they've said it's too hard. They said, wait and see till we have a problem. They used to say, this is a solution in search of a problem. They used to say that at least before Pearl Jam was silenced by AT&T when they tried to criticize the president, or Verizon blocked pro-choice text messaging, or BitTorrent was blocked by Comcast in the efforts to distribute content. They used to say these sorts of things, and they used to emphasize that there wasn't a problem here, but even if there weren't a problem here right now, this perspective misses an important point. Here in the Valley, venture capitalists now are investing money in the future. And when they invest that money in the future, they invest asking a single question: what will the world look like then when this technology needs to be deployed and profit made from this technology? And uncertainty about what the world will look like then raises the cost of these new technologies and therefore lowers the investment in those new technologies now. Not 5 years from now, but right now. If they believe the platform will be controlled tomorrow, there will be less investment today. Now, this is why, for almost 10 years, we have been asking the FCC to make a clear statement of policy about this critical infrastructure, asking the FCC and Congress, too, to make a clear statement that what we used to call the end-to-end principle, what we now call net neutrality, is a core principle of this infrastructure, a clear statement that providers in this context would look to when they select the business model that they will deploy internet technology under. A clear statement that leads them to a consistent policy driving towards deploying the kind of broadband that facilitates open innovation and competition. Now, if the FCC did this, my view is the businesses would follow. It's cheaper, more rational to follow this clear statement of the world that the FCC will help guarantee we live in, rather than play the games of trying to undermine that clear policy statement.
And that was Professor Larry Lessig, professor of law at Stanford University, giving us a bit of a historical and contextual overview of the principles of network neutrality and why it's important. He gave that keynote, that introduction at the FCC public hearing on broadband network management practices held at Stanford University on April 17th. And that's not the entirety of his presentation. So if you're interested in seeing the whole thing or actually listening to the whole thing, you can go to the MediaGeek website at MediaGeek.net. This brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. I'm host and producer Paul Riesmandel. I'll be back in 1 week with more news and views in our media environment. In the meantime, check out the Media Geek blog at MediaGeek.net. You can listen to and download the program at radio.mediageek.net, where you can also subscribe to the podcast. If you have any comments about the program, I'd love to read them. Send them to paul@mediageek.net. Media Geek is produced at Community Radio WEFT in Champaign, Illinois, and also is heard on 12 other community stations across North America, including KRFP in Moscow, Idaho, KQRP in Salida, California, KRBS in Oroville, California, WTND in Macomb, Illinois, WRFA in Jamestown, New York, CKDU in Halifax, Nova Scotia, KWMD in Kosilov in Anchorage, Alaska, Free Radio Olympia in Olympia, Washington, WVEW in Brattleboro, Vermont, CHMA in Sackville, New Brunswick, WBCR in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. The Media Geek Radio Show is available for free to any non-commercial community station. Just send email to paul@mediageek.net. Thanks for tuning in.